You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Den of Ashes, the grandson of 50s-era country and western entertainers John and Texas Peggy Clemons, comes from a long line of western music tradition. For his new CD, California, Ash says, if you skipped the needle forward 50 years, this is what western music would be. In this edition of Americana Music Profiles, we talk to Ash about the history of his grandparents' music, Ash's career, and what his new CD means for western music. Hi, Ash. Welcome to the podcast. We were talking a little bit offline before we got started, and you've got a pretty good history of music yourself, and you cutting your teeth as a musician, as well as the history from your grandparents, right?
You're absolutely right. And I grew up with the basis of the New York folklore.
Okay.
Well, you know, the folk music as well. Came out of Woodstock. There was a lot of root stuff happening, obviously, at that point. Then moving to Virginia was, it was a culture shock, obviously, from New York.
I'm sure.
But that music leaves an impression on you, just the same thing as the Fiddler's Convention and Galax.
Yeah.
You get all of the incredible people, these people just work on the farms all day long. And you get this whole other avenue of music and respect for that. And then you get the influence where Roanoke is in the, Southwest Virginia, even as far as like Harrisonburg. Look, I just saw Bruce Hornsby this past weekend.
Yeah.
He was here, and, he's a Tidewater boy.
Right.
And Wayne Pooley's been his engineer. I went to high school with Wayne. And it's just, there is definitely a basis in that music that sticks with you. I thought that was a fantastic place to be. So you're absolutely right. It is a hotbed for people that really want that influence.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I take a look at my grandparents' legacy, and they were, when they were touring, 1939 through the 40s and early 50s. And, they had traveled all 48 states, because obviously Alaska and Hawaii were not states.
Right.
At that
point. Yeah.
And, they had a Packard and they had a Vagabond trailer. And I've got a world of archives of their photographs from all of their tours and journeys.
Wow.
And it's like a lot of the Western, they were much more Western than they were country. But remember, country is focus at that point as well.
Right.
It was poor
right.
people's music.
Right,
they would tour with the, they would, everybody had their own tours, but they would definitely sync up. And, my grandparents would share the stage with the Carters, and they were, actually Mother Maybelle was really good friends with my grandmother.
Wow, that's cool.
Text reader with my grandfather.
Yeah.
So I grew up with that whole, just the basis of these entertainment people as a kid.
Right.
When they came off the road, they opened a hotel in upstate New York and catered to all of their touring and entertainment socialite friends. So I got to meet many of them growing up.
Wow, that's cool.
And it was cool when, Johnny Cash, when he was alive, Beck's first album was out, and Beck opened for Johnny Cash at Pat Tage's here. And that was before I worked on one of his music videos. But, I brought him the autograph he had signed to my grandmother. He used to stay at my grandparents' hotel.
Wow.
And he says, yeah, I remember old Peg, and her name was Texas Peggy, and he re-signed the autograph to me.
Wow, that's cool.
I got to sign this one. I'll do that.
Yeah.
Tom Petty was standing next to me cracking up, and I was like, well, what's so funny? And he said, well, you know what? This guy sent, he saw me the very first year I started touring and then brought the picture I autographed to him. 20 years later, and I said, well, I already signed it. He said, but will you sign it again? He said, he just reminded me of that.
Yeah, wow, that's cool. So did your experience with your grandparents, is that what got you into music? Was that kind of the nesting for you at that point?
Well, it was interesting because I was brought up with it, and it was just one of those everyday things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they do a lot of the entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would see a lot of their friends on Hee Haw, you know, when they came off the road. They, remember, they were the first generation,
yeah,
literally.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you start getting into Willie Nelson, which I just saw on Sunday, which was great.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, and Merle Haggard, all the other guys, those were the next generation.
Yeah.
Now when you're getting into Shooter and, you know, all these, and Waylon's son, Waylon's son and Willie's son, that is the third generation,
right? Yeah,
going in.
Yeah,
and I'm part of that. I'm part of that third generation.
Yeah,
my dad did not survive that world. You know, he died when he was 34.
Oh wow.
So, it's one of those things that I was left a really beautiful legacy,
mm-hmm.
and that's the reason why, because I have that legacy that I can go ahead and push to bring back Western. Is Western, you know, Western Americana rock, absolutely folk rock.
And I was listening to, I had this image in my mind of what Western is, and went and listened to some of the catalog of your new record, which is kind of the point of this conversation. But I you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, I guess I was thinking Western swing, which it clearly isn't. What is it that distinguishes it and makes it feel Western, by your definition?
Well, that's a very, very good question, a very easy question to answer. Now, the cadence of Western versus country, you know, is actually, well, we can talk about country now, which is pop.
Right, right, right. Not country, yeah.
Yeah, it's the, you know, you can go back in time, and let me kind of explain. If you went back into the California sound of the Eagles,
right.
Jackson Browne,
yeah.
You go in the other. If that came out now, that would be considered much more Western than it was. You know, it's like people have categorized things according to the times when they were out.
Right.
You know, it's obvious classic rock. So Western does have a classic rock feel. It does have a Western West Coast feel.
Mm-hmm.
Which it definitely does. It's, you know, it's not Appalachian, but you can hear some little influences. Actually, in my first record, there was Misty Morning, which was kind of like a fatal love song.
Yeah, okay.
But you get into, like, for instance, it's not a very snappy tone. There's the homage that people play to Western, the spaghetti Westerns.
Uh-huh.
Let's just talk about that. The Sergio Leone, Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Right.
You know, it's actually funny because my piano player, Alex Alessandrani, his father was the one who played all the guitars and was the whistle in The Good and the Bad and the Ugly.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. So it's like he has a legacy as well, a phenomenal one. And he gravitated towards the style. There's a tonality and mood, and that's one of the most important things, Greg. There's
okay.
a mood created by it, a story-based mood. You notice it's not a lot of quick picking as it is. It's
mm-hmm.
this tonal range, and it's not trying to be this over-orchestrated North Texas feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not
mm-hmm.
looking for the influences of Bakersfield. I'm not looking for the influences of North Texas. Certainly not looking for the influences of Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you start getting into, you know, Western kind of, you know, it's interesting you brought up Western swing, which is pretty cool because Western did come out of that. It was a large orchestrated music genre.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mine is, you can tell, mine's a pretty orchestrated genre. It's not, it's a very thick basis of tones on
mm-hmm.
there. You know, it's set up for a five piece,
mm-hmm.
but it has a lot to do with the mood, the subject matter, storytelling.
Right.
It
okay.
has a lot to do with the feel of a little bit of that classic rock and guitar. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's instruments that are very
mm-hmm.
much bass in there. Like if you were listening to bluegrass, you'd be expecting to hear, you know, the mandolin.
Right.
And a lot
sure.
of other different things. And so we're staying within, you know, the pedal steel. By the way, Greg Leitz, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's probably one of the greatest pedal steel players that's ever been.
Hmm, cool.
And he was on a tour with Jackson Browne. He was in town for 2 days.
Okay.
So grabbed him.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's his natural style. That's the beauty about these people. They've lived out here. They've kind of lived that classic rock and
yeah.
feel, like even Neil Young. you know, and that's and Neil Young's player is phenomenal. And that's what we're taking from, you know, it's a beautiful cross combination of a couple things. But if you were to listen to it and drive out to the desert and in the Western landscape, it would totally, you would totally understand and embrace it.
Yeah.
And that's what I get from most of my fans.
Okay.
That's really, and a lot of it is based upon the Western landscape and those thoughts and that solitude.
Thus the name of the album, California.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's autobiographical. It is about my journey. I did go from New York to Nashville out to L.A. I just happened to do it in a plane.
Right.
Go back 100 years and it's on a train.
Right. Right. So is this a newer approach for you, or has this been the theme of your music all along for your career?
Well, you know, another great question. And you know, Greg, I wrote Late Night Radio when I was 23.
Wow. Okay.
I was just out of college, and it's one of those things that stuck with me. I remember writing it, and just I was my one room apartment in Richmond, Virginia, and I was like, God, I always tried writing rock, and you know, and kind of being that progressive style. Like you went through different phases in your listening, you know, during the 80s and 90s, we were bombarded with a lot of great music.
Oh, right. One of the best eras, actually, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And you look at that and you try to decipher that. And I went in, and this was my natural style, and it came so easily to me. It really did. And I was like, this can't be good because this is the stuff I want to play over here. So I ignored.
Okay.
And I was writing, I wrote some really cool rock songs and other things, but I kept writing myself into a corner. And then finally, I just threw out everything I did. I was like, okay, because I was working in Hollywood, you know, you probably read about my music video world.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah.
So what happened was, well, that was my ability to stay close to music. What happened was I realized back then that my music probably would have not have taken. Remember, Americana, for most practical purposes, is only 4 years old in people's minds.
Right, right. I know. Yeah.
You get it. You've seen it and watched it.
Sure.
Coming to there, about 10% of Americana might qualify for being on the Western genre.
Okay.
You know, but also you take a look at Richard Ashcroft from The Verve. If you go in towards some of Richard's new songs, you'd be going like, he's got a Western flair happening.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, even the Western flair from the Yardbirds, Heart Full of Soul, is a Western riff going right into it. You know, the influence of Western has been, you know, actually has been spread throughout many different genres of music, but getting to the point of, this is my natural style. And I want to talk about the guitar I play too, and this will kind of be a prelude to this. My dad, when he died, his most prized possession was his 55 Martins.
Wow.
And I inherited it. That's my guitar. But for me, it was kind of a shrine.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really play it. The only thing I had from him.
Yeah.
And you know, I had my guitars. I had a lot of other ones, and I was like, you know, when I threw everything out, I said, I just really want to just embrace what was coming to me, my natural style. Instead of just playing music, I was composing. And I pulled out that guitar, and the tones on it and everything, something strange happened where all of these images started emerging. And when I write, I would write a kind of a skeletal structure of a song. And I said, well, you know, you walk away from it, and then you start letting the lyrics and other things start taking over the melodies, and you write according to those melodies. Everybody has a different approach of writing. You know, the Beatles, for God's sake,
yeah,
they write the music, the lyrics, and sometimes you have to separate yourself from it, and sometimes you don't, where the lyrics just come right away.
Yeah,
you learn improv, and that's what I creatively did. I just kind of just went for it and then let stuff resonate. And I embraced my natural style, and it just kept coming, and it still comes. It just keeps coming. And And what I write about when I play this Martin and I write on it, it's my primary writing guitar.
Okay.
I look for those tones and I look for those things that just start engaging, that resonate in me. And then these pictures start emerging and I write about those pictures.
Hmm. And
so the lyrics come from those, like a movie, like a music video.
Sure.
Literally,
yeah.
It plays out.
I would assume your experience in video probably enhances that ability to be able to see that imagery when you're putting those songs together.
It does. And one of the really cool things about working when Mark Romantic and I were working together, collaborating on all these music videos, you know, I was more of his visualist, but for me it was great because I got to be close to music and the really great tracks. But you find out in those music videos we did that there's very, they live in harmony. The visuals and the song live in harmony, and they're just this beautiful piece together. That's why they work so well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then you kind of get into the extremes of just kind of going in a different direction. My very last music video was Shania Twain's I'm Gonna Get You Good. I wrote that.
Mm, cool.
And the director came to me and it's like, you know, I kind of have this base idea and it really wasn't that thick. And I was like, okay, well, let's get down to the fundamental basis. It was kind of like my leaving the music video world by doing probably one of the biggest anti-videos. It had nothing to do with the song.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was going into this futuristic world and made it a video game. You know, she wanted to capture the younger audience.
Right. Okay.
And that's exactly what it did. It won the CMT Flameworthy Award.
Yeah.
It won Canadian everything.
Wow, that's
and,
cool.
So that was, you know, that was one of those things that, again, but it paired well with the music, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so that's, as far as, you know, how the visuals, if you listen to the stories in the track, they pair exceedingly well with the music. And you're right, it does play out like a music video. I think it has that enhanced value.
So the record is called California, and you are presently on tour or getting ready to go. How will you present that to your listeners?
Well, it's interesting. That's a really that's a loaded question.
Right? Okay.
I have played out. I had a concert literally 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Very beautiful, intimate one, and just seeing how things are and working out any kinks as you should. It went beautifully. I think that I took a step back and I said, well, you know, I'm not going to play bars. I'm not going to go into that world. I like things that are more proper concert.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of bands get stuck into that mode. I said, well, what experience can I do that is going to be really unique to myself and what I'm doing and to my fans? And I have, like, remember I talked about, I have this huge archive of photographs, 30s, 40s, 50s. So what I'm going to do is we're calling it the gallery tour. And I'm in the process of going through hundreds and hundreds of Ektachrome slides and photographs from that time, and I'm going to be doing gallery performances where I will be playing in a gallery with these pictures.
Oh, cool.
On display.
Yeah.
And they will be for sale as well. You know, this is the whole thing of really, I'm committing a great deal of time and effort and money.
Yeah.
To the expansion of this Western genre.
Okay.
And it's to be inclusive, because when you go play a lot of venues, it's like, okay, you're either people are at the bar having a good time, nothing to matter with that, or they're there to hear kind of a mixture of both. Hopefully people are attentive,
mm-hmm.
which most are.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes down to really giving the experience when people walk through that door that they are experiencing the whole world of what I'm you know, bringing forth and talking about.
Yeah.
And I don't see anybody really doing that. I mean, some performance artists have done it. Some people have done, like, you know, videos and kind of things that coincide with that. I have a bigger story.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to be, you know, I love it. I mean, I've looked at this stuff and I'm excited about it. And if you're excited about it, then, you know, other people get excited about it when they're introduced to it.
Yeah. And with the tone of, quote, country music changing, it's almost like it's leaving the door open for what's authentic to kind of move in and move back in and kind of take its rightful place back where it started from, which kind of feels like what I hear you saying that you're attempting
exactly
to do
right.
with this.
You nailed it. You freaking nailed it on that comment.
Yeah,
absolutely. That was a very well put.
Yeah.
And
cool.
I am, you have to embrace it. And, you know, there's a history here.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's like the same thing of like analog, you know, all of a sudden, of course, vinyl's hot, all of that.
Right, sure.
But
sure.
It's like we all had our massive collections on it. But I also have my grandparents' collections. I've had, you know, all, I even had my, I'm the youngest of a kind of a Brady Bunch marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. So when I was, really young, my brother was like the jam master on the submarine.
Okay. Cool. Yeah.
Ball. And so I'm this young kid. I'm not even 6 years old, and it comes on me and hands me a Sony cassette player, which was incredible.
It right.
Was detachable speakers. This is the tail end of Vietnam.
Okay.
And, wow. You know, so this is, you know, this is kind of almost whatever mid, you know, early mid 70s
uh-huh.
in that
uh-huh.
area, and hands me every imaginable import, everything you could possibly imagine.
Wow.
And I just sat there for, I think, ever since that point. I mean, I always loved the Beatles. I loved everything else, but just to have that.
Yeah.
And just to bake on it was incredible.
Wow.
But also, you know, with my grandparents growing up listening to Porter Wagner, listening
yep.
to Johnny Cash, listening to the Cars, you know, there's that whole influx of what became classic rock, the influence of the country, the
yeah.
influence of moving to Virginia. And you're right, it's basically, it's all this inclusive thing, but also where people have kind of, I wouldn't say people have moved it on. You know, it was the record companies that killed the genre of Western.
Oh, right, sure.
And you know, they basically just weren't seeing any sales in it. And I'm toting the flag that had Western continued and we skipped the needle forward 50 years, here's where it would be.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So when does this start for you? When will people be able to have an opportunity to experience this?
We're looking more in July.
Okay.
We're going to have a few small shows in June. What that's doing is just kind of, I have a lot of kind of people to appease right now, if you might call it
mm-hmm.
that, as I'm working on it, because there's a lot of people that want shows and I have to gear up for that, because
mm-hmm.
even getting the photos ready, getting all of those things in the venues set up
for
tour is, you know, it's a chess game, and the last thing you want to be doing in that chess game is just ping ponging from market to market.
Sure.
You want to make it as smooth as possible.
Yeah.
So what we're going to concentrate on is the West Coast for starters, you know, just working California on the radius of LA, and then moving north. And actually Virginia is probably going to get a concert sooner than most East Coast places.
Cool.
Because I have so many friends in Virginia and fans, and it's because we've also marketed to that area.
Yeah.
North Carolina, Raleigh parts. There's a lot of people that really get it, even through Tidewater. So, you know, I'm looking at a Roanoke and a Richmond show, and probably down in Raleigh.
Yeah.
And it's that chord in Asheville. You know, it's like kind of keeping that circle. So
yeah,
what
yeah.
I'm doing is kind of setting up a circle area and keeping that consistent. You know, I have some radio interviews I have to do. One's in Columbia. That's going to happen in the fall. And, you know, some things are pretty far out, but they'll be here quickly.
Yeah.
As, you know, and so there'll be a time when I have that and be able to make sure that everybody has a good heads up.
Yeah, well, I will keep my eyes out. I'll be excited, and that sounds like a neat show to experience, more than just listen to, so I look forward to to being able to do that and enjoy that with you. It sounds fun. Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frenino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.